The Apostles' Creed is one of the essential statements of what we believe as Christians. In it, we see core tenets of who God is, and all of those who would faithfully recite the words that I've just read proclaim that they believe in the triune God, and they proclaim what they believe about each person of the triune God. And yet, the Apostles' Creed also includes one of the hardest phrases to explain in all of Christian literature, that very well-known phrase about Jesus saying that he descended into hell. Now, right away, I hope you can see the dilemma that this presents to most Christians. On the one hand, we have an essential statement of what we believe, but on the other hand, we have something that many, I think most Christians, don't fully understand. So that begs the question, how can we claim to believe this thing if we don't fully understand what it says? Now, there are many Christians who see this problem right off the bat and solve it by leaving the phrase out, by not saying, descended into hell when they read the Apostles' Creed. There are whole denominations that do this, and particular churches that do this. And I want to give these people at least a little bit of credit for thinking about what they're saying and not simply blindly passing over the phrase. It's better to think about it and have an objection about it than to not think about it and not really know what you believe. But that begs the question, should the phrase be left out? Well, I'm going to give you the very simple answer. No, the phrase should not be left out of our worship. It's something that we should say as Christians. In the next few minutes, we're going to explore why I believe we should say it. Now, I want to briefly, though, touch on the reason why people who don't say it, don't say it. And the simple reason for that is because that they believe that the phrase is saying that Jesus, when he died, when he breathed his last on the cross, literally went to hell, went to the place of the damned. I'm going to say that that is not what the phrase means. And there's two reasons that I'm going to give for that. The first being that that's not what Scripture says about what happened to Jesus after he died. And the second is, I don't believe that's ultimately what the Apostles' Creed says when you look at it in its original language, which was Greek, and especially when you look at the word hell and how it was originally used in the early church. And we're going to look at those two things here in just a moment. But to know what particularly this phrase means, you have to first understand what exactly happened to Jesus before, during, and after his crucifixion. And there you start in the garden. And in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before his execution, you see that Jesus was in a state of agony, a state of great torment, on the verge of despair. Now, he wasn't simply in this state of torment because he was going to face death or because he was going to endure a great amount of pain. He was in agony of soul because he was about to face the full wrath of God on the cross. He was about to suffer unlike anything any man had suffered before or after. He was about to endure what one commentator calls the ban. He was about to become anathema. He was endured hell on the cross. I want to take a quick side here before we go on and say that this idea of Jesus enduring hell on the cross is how John Calvin attempts to explain the phrase in the Apostles' Creed that Jesus descended into hell. And while it is typically dangerous to disagree with Calvin, I'm going to do so this evening and also remind you that it was John Calvin who said that no theologian is more than 70% right. Now, I'm going to put a little asterisk on that, too, and say that Calvin is theologically right when he says that Jesus endured hell on the cross. He's wrong, though, when he says that the phrase descended into hell, as it's seen in the Apostles' Creed, refers to Jesus' experience on the cross. He's right theologically with regard to Jesus' experience. He's wrong with regard to the Apostles' Creed. And it's for the very simple reason that the word order of the Apostles' Creed seems to pretty clearly indicate that that's not what the church, early church fathers meant. See, when it comes to creeds and confessions, word order and the words that are used are very, very important. The men who did the Westminster Confession went over the words they used with a fine-tooth comb. You have to when you're doing a summary of what we believe, and the early church fathers were the same way. And so when they say that Jesus died and was buried before he descended into hell, they mean that that's the order in which things happen, that he died before he had this experience of descending into hell. And it doesn't refer to what he experienced while he was hanging on the cross. This, though, then begs the question, what exactly, and it's a very good question, what exactly happened to Jesus after he died? Well, Jesus himself tells us what was going to happen to him when he was on the cross. When he forgives one of the thieves who's hanging next to him, he says to him, "This day you will be with me in paradise." Moreover, Jesus also said on the cross that it is finished. And when he said it is finished, he meant that the work of the atonement was complete, meaning he didn't have to suffer for our sins anymore after that moment, which means he didn't need to go down and experience damnation in hell to pay our price. It was finished when he said it was finished. The atonement was finished at that point. And so, as Christians, we very simply believe that when Jesus breathed his last, his body was buried in the tomb, and that his soul went to be with his Father in heaven. Now, some of you may be wondering, though, at this point, why doesn't the Apostles' Creed simply say that? Well, why doesn't it say that Jesus suffered, died, and was buried, and that his soul ascended to be with his Father while his body went down into the grave? Well, the reason the Apostles' Creed doesn't say that is because the primary focus of the Apostles' Creed isn't on Jesus' soul. Rather, you have to realize, and this is a really important point to grasp, it's something that I think the vast majority of people who recite the Apostles' Creed don't realize, and that is a primary purpose of the Creed was to defend Jesus' humanity. Now, Jesus' humanity is not under attack, or at least not under attack as much as his divinity is today. Most, even the greatest enemies of Christianity, will admit, or almost all of them will admit, that a man named Jesus of Nazareth walked around in Palestine 2,100 years ago. That's not a great problem that we have to face. Our greatest problems come when we try to say that Jesus was God. But that things were almost the exact opposite in the early centuries of Christianity. At that time, most people didn't have a problem saying that Jesus was God. Their problem was with the idea of God becoming man. In particular, in the first centuries of Christianity, you had a group called the Gnostics. They were one of very many mystical groups that existed at the time. And the Gnostics, many of them sought to corrupt Christianity by saying that, yes, Jesus was God, but that he wasn't really man. And the Gnostics argued these types of things because they believed in a very sharp distinction between the body and the spirit, or the spiritual realm and the physical realm. They believed in also that the body was bad, that verse basically anything that was physical was bad, that it was dirty, that it was wicked, and that the spiritual, anything that was spiritual, was good, and that it was a good thing when people died because it freed the spirit or the soul or whatever you want to say from its imprisonment in the body and its imprisonment in the realm of the physical or the realm of the created. And so you can see that for these people, the idea that God could have a body, that he could be a real human being, this idea was anathema to them. And ultimately, they refused to believe it. They would say things like, yes, Jesus had the appearance of having a body, but that his body wasn't real. It was an illusion that he used to help simply to minister to us. And so you have with a phrase like descended into hell, the phrase descended into hell in the Apostles' Creed is part of the response the church fathers drafted to these Gnostics and to other people who believed that in this distinction between the physical and the spiritual, this idea, it was a counter to this idea that having a real human body was something awful. That physicality was a curse and something to be derided. And so when we recite the Apostles' Creed as Christians, one of the things we're saying is that Jesus was really a man and that he had a real human body. And moreover, that he suffered in this body, that he experienced pain in this body, that that body actually died, and that that body was buried in a real grave. And when we say that phrase, descended into hell, what we are saying is that that body remained in the grave. That body remained in the grip of death for 3 whole days. But when we say this, what we're really saying again is that when we say all of these things, the thing that we're saying is that Jesus was really a man and that he really died. Like each one of us is going to die unless the second coming comes first. Now some of you may be saying, well, that sounds good and that sounds right, but again, that doesn't seem to match the phrase that we see in the Apostles' Creed. How can you say that descended into hell refers to the time he spent in the grave with the stone rolled in front of it? Well, we say that because in one sense, the phrase descended into hell is not the best interpretation of the Greek, or at least it's an interpretation of the Greek that has lost much of its meaning as the term hell has become altered. The church fathers didn't mean by the word hell that they used in the Apostles' Creed everything that we mean by it now. Now, I'll explain this. In the Apostles' Creed, as I've already said, was written in Greek, similar Greek to what the New Testament was written in. And in the Greek language, the ancient Greek or the Middle Greek language, you have 2 different words used for hell. The one word is probably familiar to most of you. It's the word Hades. The other word may not be so familiar to you, and that word is Gehenna. If you're taking notes, it's G-E-H-E-N-N-A. Now, the worst of these two hells is Gehenna by far. Hades can mean hell, but more often than not, especially in the New Testament, it means simply death or being in the grave. It refers to the condition of the body after the soul has left it. Gehenna, on the other hand, always means damnation. It carries with it the idea of eternal punishment. It's sometimes interpreted the lake of fire. In fact, if you have a New American Standard Bible, it does a very good job of differentiating between the two words. It uses 2 different words to differentiate the 2 different Greek words. It always refers to Gehenna as hell. Anytime you see the word hell in the New American Standard Bible, it's Gehenna. On the other hand, it interprets Hades as Hades. It's, again, to show that there's a difference between the two. So what, you may be wondering, word does the Apostles' Creed use? Well, when the Apostles' Creed says Jesus descended into hell, what it's literally saying is he descended into Hades, not Gehenna. And while we've said Hades can mean hell, it's hard to believe that that's what the church fathers meant when they wrote it. First of all, as I've already said, this would blatantly contradict Scripture, and it would be very hard to imagine the church fathers could be that ignorant of their Bibles as to try to interpret it that way. And what I believe, and what I think the majority of people in the history of the church have believed, is that, well, maybe not. Anyway, that's another discussion for another night. But at least what I believe, and most of the Reformed world believes, is that when it's talking about Jesus descending into hell, we're talking about that state where the body is separated from the soul. And they're saying that Jesus died and that he was really and truly dead, that his body was lifeless in the grave for 3 days. By saying again that he was really dead, they're also saying that he was really a man, that he was a true human being. That's, again, the Reformed view of it. If you, the actual Westminster Confession proper does not address the subject, but the larger catechism does. Question 50 of the larger catechism says, or asks the question, wherein consisted Christ's humiliation after his death? And the answer to that question is, Christ's humiliation after his death consisted in his being buried and continuing in the state of the dead, and under the power of death till the third day. Then it goes on to say, which hath been otherwise expressed in these words, he descended into hell. And so that's our explanation of what it means in the Apostles' Creed that Jesus descended into hell. But that then begs a further question. What do we do with this doctrine? Well, I'm here to tell you in the next couple of minutes there's quite a bit we can do with that doctrine. The fact that Jesus' body lay in the grave is far more significant than most of us realize. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about it. Now, in our series on the book of Isaiah, we've talked about how one of the major themes of the book is that while the outward problem facing Israel was the Assyrians and the Babylonians, the real problem was with Israel's relationship to God. And you see a similar thing with the phrase descended into hell in the Apostles' Creed. The real issue with the phrase descended into hell is ultimately not what does the word hell mean, but rather the greater issue, the issue of which descended in hell is a component, the bigger issue that we all need to look at is, what does it mean that Jesus was human? Now sometimes, I think Paul would agree with me on this, you get to the end of a sermon, or writing a sermon, and you hit on an idea or a thought that makes you think, why didn't I think about that earlier in the week? Or we would have gone a very different direction if I had thought about this sooner. And I had one of those moments very late on Friday afternoon. And that is that the phrase descended into hell is interesting. It's something you can bandy about in the halls of seminary and other places. But an ultimately bigger, much bigger, and a much tougher topic. Indeed, one of the truly toughest topics in the whole history of the church, at some points in the history of church, the tough topic it had to grapple with is the humanity of Christ. And so I don't think you can have a tough topic series with talking, or at least a little bit dressing, one of the all-time great tough topics in the history of the church. Now, we've already said that there aren't, how do I want to put this? There's no real formal assault on Jesus' humanity in this day and age. At least it's not burning up the pages of the theological journals and having people writing books about it. Not to the degree that they are, at least, of other, on other subjects. But the assaults are there. they just tend to be a little more subtle. But as I think you know, subtle and quiet assaults are often much more dangerous than formal assaults and formal engagement with bad ideas. And one of the reasons why it's important to know what we believe on Jesus' humanity is that these subtle assaults often come from our own minds, without any provocation from the outside world. Let me explain what I mean and give you an example. I think all of us, or most of the people at least in this room, would very freely say that Jesus experienced everything that I experienced. And this indeed is a great comfort to us in the midst of trial. Most of us, when we're in the midst of sorrow or despair, get great comfort by looking at what Jesus endured in the Garden of Gethsemane. But at the same time, I think many of us, myself included, are uncomfortable with the idea that Jesus experienced absolutely everything that I experienced. Especially when you talk about the mundane and everyday experiences of life. I think we'll all be a little uncomfortable thinking that Jesus' digestive system worked the same way that yours and mine did, that his body worked in the same way, that as a baby he cried, and that he needed done for him the things that all infants need to have done for them. It's one thing, though, that is an essential doctrine of our faith. We sing about it in that great carol, my mom's favorite Christmas carol, Once in Royal David City. He was little, weak and helpless, tears and smiles like us he knew. What's more, though, we believe as Christians that Jesus was susceptible to things like sickness, that he had emotions, that he could be happy. He certainly was sad at times. He'd be angry. And moreover, that he was tempted, like we are tempted. And not simply that he went through the motions of being tempted, but he really and truly was tempted. Now, these things are not always easy to think about. Indeed, I think all of us are at times tempted to reject a full understanding of Jesus' humanity. Now, I think we are all tempted to think, yes, Jesus was human, but he was a little bit different than me. He was a man, but he was a bit of a Superman. And while it's true that Jesus would eventually be a Superman, that wouldn't take place until after his resurrection. Now, some of you may protest by saying, well, yes, but he did miracles and he prophesied. But are miracles and prophecy really indication of his being different from us? Men did miracles and prophesied in the Old Testament. Elijah brought a boy back from the dead. And certainly his disciples would do the same thing in the New Testament. So that's no indication that he was somehow of some different kind of substance than what we were, or that his humanity was a little more refined than ours was. The truth is that when we... Let me put it this way. It sounds strange, but each one of us is tempted to think this at times. We are tempted to think that, yes, Jesus was human, but he couldn't have been possibly as human as I am. And yet, when these thoughts come to our minds, what's really happening is we're being tempted in the same way that Peter was tempted when Jesus told his disciples that he was going to die. You remember what Peter said? Peter rebuked Jesus. He said, no, you can't die. And what he's really saying is, you can't really be like other men. You can't be like me and the rest of these men. And of course, we know where that temptation was coming from. That story ends with Jesus rebuking Satan. Get behind me, Satan. And yet, this kind of thinking, this uncomfortableness that we often have, is the ultimate root of virtually every heresy that has ever been committed. For you see, people in the world, unless your heart has been changed and affected by God, you're not going to be able to handle the idea of Jesus' humanity. People can't handle, apart from God's intervention, Jesus' humanity. they're either going to try to compromise or help themselves in one way or the other. They're either going to say, as a result of this, that Jesus wasn't really a man, or else that he wasn't really a God. But it's impossible to say that he was both without the help of God. And yet, as Christians, praise be to God, as Christians, we joyfully reject both of those faulty understandings of who Jesus was. We reject the idea that he was just a man, and we also reject the idea that he was only a God, or that he was only God in the appearance of man. As Christians, we proclaim that the Son of God was also the Son of Man. We proclaim that the Son of God became man, and that he experienced our full experience in order that he might fully redeem our experience. No other religion in the world has this. They don't even come close to having anything remotely like God becoming man. Indeed, what's more, every other religion in the world, whether a person professes to believe something or whether they profess to believe nothing, every other one hates us because of it. They're offended that we can have a God who's not simply like us, but that we have a God who is us, right down to his lying in a grave, like all of us will one day. The world will scorn and deride us for what we believe when we say the Apostles' Creed. And yet, Jesus' humanity and his humiliation in becoming human are amongst our most precious blessings. Indeed, they are our greatest glory.